ॐ भद्रं कर्णेभिः शृणुयाम देवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तुष्टुवागंसस्तनूभिः व्यसेम देवकिदं यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्ताक्षो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीरामकृष्णार्पणमस्तु। So we are continuing the discussion on the 16th verse of the first chapter of Mandukya Karika, that is called Agama Prakaranam, I mean the first Prakaranam, first section of the text. So a very interesting discussion we had yesterday about this process of spiritual sleep and spiritual awakening. So a very important point in spiritual life. Now, incidentally, I must mention that this Upanishad deals with many important philosophical, metaphysical aspects of Vedanta, including a detailed analysis of pranava or pranava upasana, omkara, akara, ukara, makara, which constitute the three syllables which constitute pranava or omkara, and how the transcendental dimension of these three, that is something that goes beyond all the three, is called Turiya, or the fourth, it's called Amatra. We are not dealing with that part of it, because that will have a very detailed discussion about the Pranavopasana. In this retreat, I was trying to focus on the spiritual significance of the Mandukya approach towards Vedanta, I mean the analysis of the three states of human consciousness, and how if we analyze our own states of consciousness, we will be able to get a glimpse of the true nature of our personality, the Turiya, the Atman. That was what we are trying to focus on. So the verse is again, अनादि मायया सुप्तो यदा जीव प्रबुद्धिदे अजम अनिद्रम अस्वप्नम अद्वैतम बुद्धिदे तदा। So long as we are contented with this empirical universe, though we may be making an effort to understand its true nature, but still in spite of our best efforts, we are not able to come out of it. You may have listened to the lecture that we read yesterday from Swamiji. A total helplessness is there, and the danger is we like this state of helplessness. In fact, people want to remain in a state of bondage. Again, I can refer to the analogy in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. You know, when a fisherman catches fish, sometimes he may not be able to catch some kinds of clever fish. They know the fisherman is out. Mm-hmm. So many of the clever species may try to keep out of the net. They are never caught. So Sri Ramakrishna calls them Nitya Muktas, the ever liberated. There's no question of even making an effort for liberation, because for them, they are always in a state of ever liberated state. So Sri Ramakrishna himself gives the example of Vivekananda. Then there are those who are caught, but they make an effort and they realize that they are in a state of bondage. It happens in so many ways. This could happen through sheer accident, as you may read the story of Saint Augustine, or you may read the story of Saint Francis of Assisi. Wherever there is a story of a very unexpected sudden transformation, is an example of spiritual awakening. Though apparently it may appear to be a sudden unexpected transformation, but still if you analyze, you find there is a story behind. So the so-called sudden transformation is not really a sudden transformation. The spiritual person becomes fit. So people who get discontent with this empirical universe, people who may have shocking experiences, it's called destiny catching you by the throat and making you open your eyes, is an expression in one famous Sanskrit verse, which I'm translating to English. But still, people may open their eyes and then they may go to a drugstore, or drugstore means where, or they may take to alcoholism. People who want to run away from a problem may run away from a problem instead of trying to solve the problem. But those who have some spiritual background and those who have done some spiritual sadhanas in the past, those who have reached, they have reached some degree of fitness through their own spiritual practices in the past, feel like going in search of a higher opening. So suddenly when they happen to read a great book, scripture, when they happen to listen to a great idea being expounded, then suddenly they feel at home and they are just transformed. This is what happened to Yam, for example. You know, Yam was an household, a well-educated man, Sri Ramakrishna's chronicler, the one who wrote the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna in the form of a diary. He had a large family which he could not manage. He was not financially so well off, so he was not very poor either. Well-educated man, a very sensible person. And one day he left his home, apparently, to commit suicide. And he was followed by his wife, traveled all over the city, reached a place, and a hackney carriage broke down, and he hired another one, reached a home, reached the home of a friend, and the friend was not very much amused when this man suddenly appeared with his wife in midnight. So he was not very hospitable. I am understood that he left that place, continued his journey in the dark night in the city of Calcutta, and finally reached the home of his own nephew, Siddheshwar Majumdar, stayed there for some days, and after just a few days, the nephew asked him, "Well, there is a holy man living on the banks of Ganga. Why don't you go there?" In fact, they were walking actually in the banks of Ganga, moving from garden to garden. And suddenly the idea came to this man. There is a holy man. And the Siddheshwar Majumdar was a good person. Many companions won't give that kind of suggestions, you know. That's what we are going to discuss in the analogy that we left halfway behind yesterday. The famous analogy of Gandhara Purusha means the story of the poor pilgrim who was left in the thick forests, abandoned. That we will come back to that analogy. So many people won't give that kind of suggestion. So in the analogy, Shankaracharya Bhashyakara says, you should be careful whose suggestion you listen to. Here, fortunately for Yam, he was a very highly cultured person and coming from a highly cultured family. So his nephew told him, "Well, there is a holy man living in a temple nearby. Why don't we go there and see him?" And they eventually reached the temple, appeared in front of Sri Ramakrishna's room. And when Yam Mahendranath Gupta, who later became Sri Ramakrishna's chronicler, saw this holy man sitting there talking about God and spiritual life, suddenly he felt a great attraction, and that was the beginning of his life, a new life. That's the beginning of a new chapter in his life. His nephew possibly did not become a disciple of Sri Ramakrishna. So nephew took him there. He had the good nature, the good samskaras to give the right kind of suggestion to his suffering uncle. But then the point is, his uncle Yam had already reached a degree of spiritual fitness. So the suggestion came and it clicked, and that was the beginning of a new chapter in his life, and he became a great saint. He was a well-educated man, he became a great saint. And he was the one who actually directed many of Sri Ramakrishna's monastic disciples in later life to Sri Ramakrishna. Many of Sri Ramakrishna's prominent monastic disciples were actually his students. The headmaster will be talking about God instead of talking about examination. So they reached Sri Ramakrishna, and that's how the great Ramakrishna order was formed. So we can see the transformation. So the transformation requires many factors. You need a right source, a right method. It may be a providence, it may be coming as a gift of God, but then that's not enough. You must be able to respond to that. I could respond to that. So, and that's how, you know, anadi mayaya suptu yada jiva prabuddhite. This individual soul is in deep sleep, in spiritual stupor. And suddenly he opens his eyes, and that's the beginning of a new life for him. So, coming back to the analogy which we left yesterday, and that is a very famous analogy. These are all unique parables and examples, illustrations from the Vedic literature. Coming back to the analogy, so you should remember the story again, how a pilgrim was returning home to Gandhara, which is in Afghanistan, the city of Kandahar. Which later, the Gandhara, the Sanskrit name, came to be known as Kandahar. And those of you who may think this is a mythology, it's not a mythology. One of the most famous schools of Buddhist art is Gandhara School of Art. It's one of the most celebrated. You find Gandhara schools of painting displayed in all the world museums, in Paris, in London, here in Washington, everywhere you find. Gandhara art was one of the most celebrated forms of ancient art form, painting, sculpture, and so on. So, the point is, this man was going and he was ambushed, he was robbed, he was taken to the thick forest. And then he was blindfolded. So, the Upanishad mantra is something like this. Tasya yatha apinahanam pramuchya prabruya Edam Gandhara, Edam Disham Vraja Iti. The meaning means the compassionate traveler who listens to this man's crying and weeping and shouting in the thick forest suddenly stops for a moment, reaches the place where he is tied to a tree and tells him, come on, you come to the main street. That's what he means. This way you move and you reach your hometown. Edam Gandhara, Edam Disham Vraja Iti. So Edam Disham Gandhara, Edam Disham Vraja. This way, come on. You come to the main street. So the teacher, the compassionate traveler in this context, removed the blindfold, removed the ties, I mean the rope, and then brought him to the main street and then pointed his finger towards the direction of these poor pilgrims' hometown, Gandhara. Now, this is the place where you are supposed to go, and you move in this direction. So, we may get an idea from a book. It could happen in so many different ways. We may listen to a great lecture, we may get instruction from a teacher. There are many, many ways of getting a sudden knock and being forced to open our eyes. But then many people go back to sleep again. Suddenly we may be in need of an awakening, but we may not fully get the benefit of that awakening. So the story continues. Sagrama gramam prichin pandito medhavi gantharan eva upasambadhyeta eva meva ikada acharivan purusho veda tasya tavadeva chiram yavat navimokshi athasambarchi iti. This is the mantra from the 14th Brahmana, 14th section of the 6th chapter of Chandogya Upanishad, which is from Samaveda. Okay, now the teacher told him, you go in this way. in the life of an ordinary spiritual seeker. Maybe you go to Berkeley University or any prominent university, suddenly you read a book. It will have an effect on our mind only if we have reached some degree of fitness to absorb and to fully make use of that message. No message can have any effect unless we are ready for it. I can again refer to the famous story illustration in the autobiographical writings of Saint Teresa of Avila. So unless the soil is ready, the seeds won't grow. That's the real importance of the famous parable in a sower of the seed. The importance is not for the seed, not even for the sower, but for the soil. The soil should be ready. Because some seeds fell, you may remember the biblical parable, some seeds fell on the rocky path, some fell on the thistles, thorns, and in so many places. But then some seeds really fell on fertile ground and it grew 104,000 fold. That's how the parable goes on. But Vedanta extends this parable beyond the limits. It says, even if the seed falls on the rocky ground, that means even if we get a teaching, a wonderful idea from a book or from a lecture, from a spiritual instruction, still, and if we suddenly, if you are not ready for it, it's just like the seeds falling on empty ground or rocky ground, or maybe among thorns, the seeds may get strangulated. There is no fertile soil, so the seeds cannot take root, it cannot become a sprout or a tree. Vedanta says, the seeds, once it falls, it won't be lost. So that's one line of demarcation between the biblical parable and the parable of Vedas. Vedas tell you, once the sower's seed fall on the ground, whether the ground is rocky, fertile, or very dry, it won't be destroyed. The birds cannot come and eat up. And the thistles and thorns cannot strangulate. It will be dried up if it falls on rocky ground. What happens, you know, maybe not in this life, maybe after maybe 15 lives, a bird will come and take this seed and fly for 10 miles and put it in a fertile ground. If we pray, if we do spiritual practices, then we can gain spiritual fitness. It's called Adhigaritva Siddhi in the Bharatiya literature. Through our own efforts, we can reach spiritual fitness. So, very often, you know, if the prarabdha karmas do not permit us to have the experience now, still we should remember the prarabdha karmas need not necessarily reach full fulfillment. Its velocity and its momentum should get exhausted. See, in the Bhashya literature, in the Brahma Sutra Bhashya, Shankaracharya compares, he gives the classical comparison, you know, prarabdha karmas, I mean the karmas which we consider cause for the present life and embodiment. It's like an arrow that has left the bow. Now the arrow doesn't necessarily have to hit the target. It is moving with the velocity. What it needs is nothing but the extinction of the momentum. And this could happen if a strong wind blows, the arrow may be deflected and it may not, need not reach the target. Or maybe some rock, something else may come in between the target and the flight of the arrow. So the arrow will hit with some other object or may be deflected. Its velocity, its momentum may get completely extinguished. And the Advaita Acharya, Shankaracharya, it's just like our own effort, as a result of which we get God's grace. So God's grace is like a strong wind that takes the arrow in another direction. So one may quickly reach the spiritual destination. So here, again coming back to the mantra, Once you get instruction to get spiritual awakening, you should make your own effort. For that, see, grama gramam prichan. So the spiritual seeker should not go and sleep thinking that now he has reached the goal. He should make his own effort. So sravanam, mannam, nidhyasanam, you should listen to scriptures. You should discuss the ideas contained in the scriptures. Then you should exchange ideas, and you should always move in the right company, not in the wrong company. You should associate only with fellow spiritual seekers, and you should not associate with people whose association may prevent our own spiritual growth. So, grama, graman, prichan, you know, if the pilgrim wants to get back to Gandhara Desha, then he should ask some other companions, travelers, whom he may meet in the street. I want to get back to my hometown. Which way I should move? You may reach a junction where four roads, four streets may meet. You know which way to go. So you should be Pandito Methavi. That's the Pandita says. Bhashyakara says, you should have Granthadharana Shakti. Means you should be able to understand the true implication of the scriptures, and keeping in mind, you should also have steadfastness. You should not be tempted. So when you are moving in the street in one direction towards your hometown, and suddenly you find a wonderful garden, oh, let me go and enjoy the garden for some time, and after some rest I will continue my journey. That could cause delay of several births, several lives. That's why in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, coming going to Sri Ramakrishna's Gospel again, you know, one old man said, I can renounce this world, I can take to spiritual life any moment, any day I want. And he showed that. His wife was not so appreciative of his strong will. So you can read the Gospel, I won't go into those details. He said, no, no. The wife was talking about a person who was trying to renounce by installments. So this man was not so appreciative of that. Oh, that's not real renunciation. He was going for a bath, body or oil. He said, this is a real renunciation. He went for, he never returned, of course. So that kind of strong will, it should not be taken literally. That kind of strong will is necessary for spiritual life. So they say grama graman prichan pandito methavi gandhara neva upasambadhyeta. So if we are steadfast in spiritual life, with a strong iron determination, and we have complete concentration and focus, then we are sure to reach the goal, to reach the destination, not otherwise. For that we should be pandito methavi. So two important qualifications are necessary for spiritual life. First, we should have proper wisdom. Actually mean not discrimination, what you call discerning mind. And methavi, the ability to understand and retrain the true meaning of great instructions and scriptural teachings. And then a much more important, an iron will, that's a must for success, not only in material life, and much more so in spiritual life. That's why when Lord Krishna gives a list of qualifications of great devotees in the 12th chapter of the Gita, so he says, Sandushta Satatam Yogi Yatatma Dridhanischayaka. But there are other qualities. You should have full self-control, you have your contentment, inner contentment. But much more important, according to Shankarananda Saraswati, says, Dridhanischayaka means you should have an iron will, strong power of determination, strong determination, so that you won't be swayed in one direction or other. Then what happens, you know, he will reach the goal. Evameva iha acharivan purusho veda tasya tavadeva chiram yavatna vimokshi atha sambhatsi iti. Now, what is the role of a teacher? The role of the teacher is, the teacher should be familiar with the terrain. Here, who was the teacher? The teacher was actually, he was returning from Gandhara Desha, and a pilgrim was going towards Gandhara Desha. So the teacher must have traveled up and down through these two points many times. He should be fully familiar with the terrain, with the trail, with the path. Then only he will be able to give direction. But the best teacher cannot give you spiritual liberation on a platter. Even incarnations never did that. They won't do that. Because that will unsettle the scheme of creation itself. So, the main focus is one should attain spiritual fitness. So, even after reading a great statement in the scripture, we won't fully understand it. And its true implication, we will understand as we acquire higher and higher levels of spiritual fitness. I mentioned this in the last session, two sessions earlier. You know, two schools of thought in Vedanta. One is called, Prasankhyanavada, the other is Shabda Aparokshavada. According to Sureshwara, according to Padmapada, Sarvajnana Muni, we call Vivarana Prasthana, or Abhas, Vartika Prasthana, and all that. According to them, if you are fully fit, if you have reached the highest degree of spiritual fitness, that means Adhanada Dushta Sambhati, meditation, Sravana Manana Nididhyasana, and Chitta Shuddhi, purity of mind, if a person has reached the highest degree of perfection of fitness, then just one instruction from a teacher will translate into experience, as it happened in the case of Sri Ramakrishna. And as it happened in the case of Shankaracharya, who got instruction from Govinda Bhagavata. So in the case of Sri Ramakrishna, for 12 years, he was only contemplating on God. He did not know about the world, he did not know anything about empirical life, phenomenal life, or worldly experience, nothing. He did not even know, he was not aware of when the sun was setting in the west and when was rising in the east next day morning. He did not. He was totally unconscious of life, of the empirical experiences. He was fully immersed in God. So, Sri Ramakrishna had reached that highest degree of perfection. That is the highest, we call Sadhana Jadushte Sambhati, Nitya Nitya Vastu Vega, Iha Mutra Phalabhoga Viraga, Samadhi Sukha Sambhati, Mumukshutu. You already explained this earlier. And also through constant contemplation, he had reached the highest degree of spiritual fitness. So, when Tothapuri gave the instruction, immediately it became an experience. So, it was not a concept when he received it from Tothapuri. He got as an idea, Tothapuri himself was a man of realization, experience, but immediately it became an experience. But it doesn't happen to everyone. It doesn't happen to all spiritual seekers. It happens only to advanced spiritual seekers. So the other school is Prasankhyanavada, where you get instruction, you may read a scripture, you may meditate and contemplate and think for a long time, you may internalize what you read and what you listen, what you hear from a great teacher. Then through constant contemplation, meditation, called Dhyana Abhyasa or Prasankhyana, you get higher and higher you get more and more complete picture of what instruction you receive. You won't get all of a sudden. As you evolve in your own level of spiritual fitness, you will realize the true implication of the instruction. Just like in schools, students who are not very brilliant may take some time to understand what the teachers teach in the classroom, not otherwise. Now, what are these methods? In the text, you have to remember the analogy. The blindfold is the symbol of wrong understanding, delusion, moha, etc. I mean, the pilgrim was taken blindfolded to the thick forest. Already we explained yesterday. So his eyes are blindfolded. So right now, he doesn't see that. He doesn't have a clear vision. So he is in a state of spiritual stupor, anadimaya sukta means in a spiritual sleep. So first the teacher removes the blindfold. So when we read scriptures, suddenly our eyes open, our mind opens to a new set of spiritual ideas. And a new personality, a spiritual seeker personality, suddenly emerges from our system. Through constant practice, this spiritual personality, the second dimension, the new spiritual dimension of the personality, should be strengthened. He should grow higher and higher in stature through constant contemplation, through scripture reading, through discussion. And then he should have the wisdom to ask other travelers, that's a gramal gramam prichan. When you meet other people moving towards the same destination, or maybe those who are coming from that place, you should be able to make sure that you are moving in the right direction. So our efforts, our talks, our conversations, our activities should have a spiritual orientation. Of course, in yoga tradition is called Kriya Yoga. Tapaswadhyaya Isha Pranidhanani Kriya Yoga. That's the first sutra in the Sadhana Padam Yoga Sutras. Tapaswadhyaya Isha Pranidhanani Kriya Yoga. So Kriya Yoga is recommended as one important methods of acquiring higher and higher degree of fitness, so that we will have the wisdom to ask other fellow spiritual seekers for confirmation whether we are taking the right route or not. Again, four yogas, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Raja Yoga, these are also different paths, different methods of reaching the right destination, or rather avoiding the wrong destination. Very often in spiritual life we meet certain dead ends. We won't know which way to move. So spiritual life doesn't always function as a straight line progression. You find after some progress, suddenly there is a state of stagnation, or what appears to be stagnation may not be really stagnation. When we don't make enough we feel that we are not making enough progress. To give an example, at the beginning of spiritual life, it is like moving from stage 1 to, or stage 0 to stage 2. So you feel you are making rapid progress. The sudden change, a sudden set of priorities, may give us the impression that we are moving very fast, very rapidly. But then, after making a lot of progress, we reach a stage where we feel that we are not making any progress. See, the evolution or growth from 0 to 2 is apparently much more rapid than the evolution from 2 to 9. That's an important point to remember. And then sometimes we reach a state of stability, which may appear to be what is often called the dark night of the soul. So on such occasions, we must practice this Kriya Yoga, the Tapas Swadhyaya Isha Pranidhanani, of which two important, the later of the two, the later two elements are very important. It is discussed in the Vartika literature of Brihadaranyaka and all that, you know. That is called Swadhyaya and Ishwar Pranidhana. The yoga path, Patanjali yoga system, is not recognized as a full-fledged path leading to the highest realization in Advaita Vedanta. In Advaita Vedanta, Patanjali system is very important because it helps you to reach the highest degree of mental fitness called Chitta Shuddhi or Sattva Shuddhi. When Vritti Nirodha happens, mind becomes ready for the highest degree of spiritual fitness or Chitta Shuddhi or purity of mind. And purity of mind immediately is followed by Jnana Prapti and liberation. That's why Karma Nishthayaha ചിത്തശുദ്ധിദ്വാരേണ പുരുഷാർത്ഥഹേതുത്വം ന സ്വാതന്ത്ര്യേണ ജ്ഞാനനിഷ്ഠാതു സ്വാതന്ത്ര്യേണ പുരുഷാർത്ഥഹേതുഃ അന്യാൻ അപേക്ഷ. സോ ശങ്കരാചാര്യ ഹിംസെൽഫ് സ്റ്റേറ്റ്സ് ഇൻ ദി മാണ്ഡുകകാരിക ഭാഷ ആൻഡ് ഓൾസോ ഗീതാ ഭാഷ. ഇറ്റ് മീൻസ് കർമ്മനിഷ്ഠ ഓർ യോഗനിഷ്ഠ പതഞ്ജലി സിസ്റ്റം by themselves do not constitute a path that will take us to the highest spiritual realization, but that will help us to reach the penultimate state, which will automatically take us to the next stage of jnana prapti, or what we call the highest spirit advaitic realization and liberation later on. This idea behind, but to reach this stage we must first of all make our mind full of, fill our mind full of spiritual vrittis, spiritual ideas. For that it is very important, swadhyaya is very important. Swadhyaya literally it means reading of holy scriptures with full understanding of the meaning, so that we can do mananam. That's the literal meaning, but higher meaning is filling the mind with spiritual vrittis, with jnanavrittis, vidyavrittis. That's the process of swadhyaya. Swadhyaya means whatever ideas you are associating with, either by listening or through casual association, these ideas in a way go very deep in forming our character. That's why one strong warning given again and again in the teachings of Sri Ramakrishna and many other great modern teachers, you know, we should be very careful about wrong association. You may be a very, very, very advanced spiritual seeker, but wrong association, which will cause wrong association of wrong ideas, can have a disastrous effect, destructive effect, you know, effect in our spiritual life. That is, swadhyaya is very important, and Ishwara Panidhana. Belief and complete resignation to God's will. So how it works is this. When we look upon God as our protector, you know, this, in the bhakti tradition is called prapatti or saranagati. When we look upon God as the one source of all our guidance and protection, that will get all our thoughts and ideas and actions linked to God. So it is called prapatti. Anugulyasya sankalpaha pradigulyasya varjanam rakshasiddhi vishwasa voptrutva varanam tatha apnikshepa karpanne shadvidha sharanagati. This is Ramanuja's definition of prapatti or sharanagati, or they will call Ishwara Paridhanam as understood in this yoga system, and also in the Vedanta, of course, as a means for the highest degree of spiritual fitness. So once we keep our mind attuned to God idea through positive thoughts and complete avoidance of negative thoughts, that is pratikulyasya varjanam, and a strong conviction that God will protect us and God as a sole protector, and a complete resignation of all our will, then what happens? That will make our mind ready. Then we will naturally develop an instinctive sense of correctness in our mental system, the mind becoming our own guru. It is called, Sri Ramakrishna calls it, mind becoming our own guru. As we evolve in spiritual life, then we will be able to find out for ourselves what's the right path. We will develop an instinctive ability or a mental filtering mechanism to avoid and filter out wrong associations and wrong influences, and to adopt right associations. This is, this filtering mechanism is an interesting phrase used by Swami Yatheswarananda-ji in his famous book, Meditation and Spiritual Practice. So he uses this simple, in a, you know, it mostly, it contains a lot of discussions, question and answer sessions, Q&A. It happened before Second World War when he was traveling in Europe. So one solution that he gives to spiritual seekers is, you should be able to develop a kind of internal mental filtering mechanism. And that's what exactly the Upanishad says. You know, you see, gramat gramam prichan pandito methavi. We should have a strong sense of discrimination, a discerning mind, so that we'll be able to find direction with our own effort. And then we will reach our destination. That is the implication of this important prakarana from the Chandogya Upanishad, which we were discussing yesterday. Now we'll continue the discussion. Anadi maya sutto idha jiva prabuddhide ajamanidrama swapnam advedam buddhide tatha. Now the question arises, and the very important subject comes here. How to develop a filtering mechanism? As I mentioned yesterday, you know, I'm leaving out the pranavopasana part of the Upanishad, because that is a technical subject. So how to develop a filtering mechanism? So the scriptures give one important suggestion. We should develop a higher ideal. We should develop a focus. We should give an orientation to our natural tendencies, our actions, our endeavors, the physical activities, mental activities, or verbal activities. Whatever we do should be given a spiritual orientation, a Godward orientation. Otherwise, we won't be able to even feel real contentment. So frequently, one story is taken from Bhagavata Purana. So, you know, I mentioned some time back, you know, Bhagavata has got 2-3 paramparas, traditions. The most important tradition is that Lord Vishnu himself taught to Brahma, Brahma taught to Narada, Narada taught to Vyasa, Vyasa taught to his son Shuka, and his disciple Ramakrishna was present. So Ramakrishna later taught in Naimisharanya, and Shuka taught to Parikshit. Anyway, I'm not focusing on this aspect. What I'm focusing on, how Narada happened to teach Bhagavata Purana to Vyasa. That's a subject. So as I mentioned, you know, Narada was a great saint, a philosopher. And it was his mission to appear wherever there was a need. Anybody who was trying to take to spiritual life, Narada will suddenly manifest and give direction. That was his life mission. So one day it so happened that Vyasa was sitting on the banks of River Saraswati. This is a mythology. So Saraswati, of course, it actually is a living river. About 10,000 years back, that's what the geologists tell you. Anyway, so the Vyasa was the most famous author of ancient times, a great philosopher, the most accomplished saint philosopher of his age. That means, you know, he had written Mahabharata, which is very famous, 145,000 verses in the larger version, 100,000 verses in his normally available version. It's a huge work. And incidentally, he is also the author of Bhagavad Gita. It's a part of Mahabharata. And he was the one who classified Vedas. Vedas were just one corpus, spiritual corpus, which Vyasa edited and classified into four. That is Rigveda, Samaveda, Rigveda, Yajurveda, Samaveda, Atharveda. So four Vedas. So he was the most accomplished philosopher, author, saint of his time, and his disciples were themselves very famous. This Vyasa was not very happy. That's the main focus in the early part of Bhagavata Purana. Why Vyasa happened to write a book called Bhagavata Purana? He was not very happy, he was depressed. The most accomplished person, the most famous author, and some of his own disciples were famous saints. Maybe they had inner contentment, which Vyasa did not have. So one day he was sitting on the bank of the river Saraswati. So Narada appeared. You know, Narada did the same to Valmiki. Valmiki was sitting somewhere, and the same Narada appeared and taught Valmiki Ramayana, the story of Ramayana. No. So anyway, so when Narada appeared, he felt Vyasa was in a depressed mood. So he asked Vyasa, what's the matter with you? So Vyasa said, I don't know. Narada himself stated that you have classified the four Vedas, you have wrote the great Mahabharata, you wrote Vyasa Smriti, which is a very famous Smriti. So he written many, many books. Vyasa did not know why he was not unhappy. He was terribly depressed. Then Narada himself gave a reason why he was unhappy. Now Vyasa's great magnum opus was Mahabharata. You know, in a way it is said to be 13 times as big as Homer's Iliad and Odyssey and Virgil's Aeneid put together. So that's the size of the book. And there are hundreds of dynasties, thousands of sages, and hundreds of long philosophical dialogues like Bhagavad Gita. So you can imagine the grandeur of the work. It's a great philosophical work, metaphysical work, and spiritual classic. But he was unhappy. The Narada told him, you know, in the Mahabharata, you discussed dharma. And what is dharma? Dharma is nothing but duty. What you ought to do, if you know, nirupa dharma means the dharma, duty, righteous conduct for a king, for a saint, for an householder, for a son or a daughter, there is called, you know, all grihastha dharma, then dharma, the right conduct for monks, for householders, all kinds of dharma. Dharma is like a constitution, more refined kind of constitution. What you ought to do by virtue of your position and your status in society and family. That's what dharma is all about. So dharma is not an ultimate means for the highest spiritual goal. Dharma need not necessarily, the performance of dharma may not guarantee the highest spiritual fulfillment. It may guarantee normal success and achievement in every life. Of course, it may also can take you to some higher goal. But it is not a guarantee that you will succeed in the highest spiritual goal in your life. So Narada told him, dharma is neutral. You know, in the Mahabharata, Duryodhana is a great villain. He has his own dharma. And he defends his own actions. Dushyasana is another villain in the Mahabharata. And he has his own justification for all his evil activities. So if you get a brilliant attorney, even Hitler can get scot-free from a court of law. So dharma or constitution, the science of right conduct, is neutral. So that's why often what is legally right may be morally wrong, ethically wrong. So legal righteousness and moral righteousness may not be the same. Frequently may be the same, but very often not. What is constitutionally right, what is conventionally acceptable, may be the very opposite of what is ethically and morally acceptable. So two different aspects. So Narada told him, this is not enough. You have just given a mighty book on constitution, human conduct, dharma. That is not a big deal, you speak modern language. So Narada told him, you should write a book which contains some direct instructions and teachings that will help humanity to achieve the highest spiritual goal. Then you will be happy. If you give somebody something really worthwhile, you will be happy. The other person also will be satisfied. So unless you have a higher ideal in your life, unless you give to people something really worthwhile that will guide them not only through their empirical secular duties and responsibilities, but also will take them the highest spiritual fulfillment, you can never be happy. You do that and you'll be happy. So that was the instruction that Narada gave to Vyasa. And Vyasa wrote Bhagavata Purana. So that became a great classic. So Bhagavata Purana, though it's a mythological book, it is as great as Vedas. Idam Puranam Brahma Samhita means it is equal to Vedas. That's the meaning Bhagavata Purana itself says. It tells you the story of great saints and sages, especially the story of Lord Krishna, which is story of how and why we can reach the highest spiritual goal by translating all actions into a spiritual sadhana. So when Parikshit, a king in the Bhagavata tradition, was staring at death, he had only 7 days to live. You know, sir, it so happened, I'm not going into those details, we may discuss later. A king who knew he had only 7 days to live, 7 into 24 hours, so to speak. And he puts a question to a teacher, to his teacher, Shuka. So he says, Atha prachami sam siddhim yoginam paramam gurum purusha seha yat karyam mriyamana se sarvata. What should a dying man do? Your death is staring at you. Only 7 days. You withdraw all the bank from, you do all the money from the bank, go to Hawaii or Las Vegas? Or is there something higher? In answer to this, Bhagavata Purana begins the whole exposition by giving answer to this question. And Shuka says, Etavan Sankhya Yoga Abhyam Sodharma Parinishthaya Brahma Janma Labha Parapumsam Ante Narayana Smuti. The whole of human existence should be to be able to leave this world with a smile on your face and with God in your, God's form in your heart and perfect inner contentment within your mind. That should be the ultimate goal of human existence, human life. So Ante Narayana Smuti means you should be able to think of God as you leave this world. And this is possible by making your road ready, making your life ready for it. How? Through the practice of Nishkama Karma. I mean, by translating all our actions into spiritual sadhana, spiritual practice, looking upon every word as a sacred mantra, every action as an act of worship, looking upon the whole life and creation as an expression of the divine, and the whole spiritual life as a constant spiritual journey. This is one way, karma yoga. Or jnana yoga, meditating upon the supreme reality, the all-pervading immanent reality, the Atman. Or through self-restraint, or through devotion, by whatever means your mind is willing to follow, accept, you should try to leave this world without pain, without complaint, with perfect inner contentment, which really can come only when you think of God as you leave this world. This should be the ultimate goal of human existence. So this is one way of conserving our energy and focusing our energy in a spiritual direction, giving a Godward spiritual orientation to the whole process of human life, activities and thoughts and ideas. Now, if you take this ideal as a guide, as a guiding ideal for our whole life, then slowly we will come out of this spiritual stupor, spiritual sleep, and without our being aware of it, we'll be slowly opening our eyes. That is, anadi maya suptaha ida jiva prabuddhite. At that time, the inner mind will open, awaken to the reality of the divine truth present everywhere. That is how the spiritual awakening happens in the life of any spiritual seeker. Now we have interaction. Maybe we have a good half an hour. We can ask questions. Yeah. Okay.
I couldn't catch that two other things. I forgot the name. Before you start, that I don't remember that. You know, the two things that, the four things, I mean, when two things you do, that it is not required, that I forgot.
You are talking about the surrender ideal or something else you are talking about?
The
the first Vadhyaya.
Oh yeah, okay. That is, it's called Kriya Yoga. So Kriya Yoga is a term used in Patanjali system in the first sutra in the Sadhana Pada. Tapaswadhyaya Ishara Pranidhanani Kriya Yoga. So tapa actually means chitta ekagrya manattava, actually self-restraint, self-control, mastery of our own senses, the ability to direct our mind and our senses into spiritually useful channels. So that is tapa, self-restraint, self-control. And once you achieve this, then you'll be able to feed your mind with spiritual vritti, spiritually helpful vasanas and impressions, by diverting all our senses and mind to spiritually healthy, helpful activities. That's the meaning.
All scriptures tell us to be in good company, uplifting company.
Yeah.
What about when we are working? When we are working, we can't choose our company. For example, you are working in a prison, or you are working in a in an office with people that are completely different and have other aims than you.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that other energy?
Yeah. There are two aspects of holy company or unholy company, both. One is, we may find ourselves in a workplace or in a life situation where we are totally helpless with regard to the choice of friends or associates. We can't do that. We can't help it. What we must do, we must keep in our mind a spiritual focus. So that will always help us to automatically filter out the negative vrittis, negative vibrations that we may happen to get associated with. But much more important, what is implied here is something else. Very often, those who are beginners in spiritual life get trapped into unhelpful, undesirable associations. Even when we have an option or a choice, we may get associated with that. That we must avoid. That's the real implication. Otherwise, you know, in the ancient sages in Vedic time, they were living in forest, and there were demons, there were evil people, there were wild animals. So it was true all the time, you know. There are some unavoidable circumstances where physically we will not be able to be away from unholy or undesirable associations. There is no choice. That is easier. But much more important is, very often we may get associated with wrong types of associations. Even when there is an option for us, we may not always use that option to keep out of that. That should be careful. That's important. Of course, there is one way to do that, to make a positive effort to be always associated with spiritually healthy ideas. If we make a positive effort to be always associated with spiritually healthy, desirable circumstances, then the effect of undesirable circumstances will not be very strong. We cannot always make a deliberate effort to avoid the undesirable. You know, I gave the example of a funny example. A patient who was losing his hair went to a doctor, and the doctor gave one prescription: you should never think of an egg. So the patient's only effort from that moment onwards was to avoid thinking about an egg, which means every time he tries to avoid thinking of it, he has to think of it. So you must first think of it, then only the idea of not thinking it will arise. So even when you try to avoid doing something, you are actually connecting with that mentally. So instead of worrying about that, we must always try to keep ourselves connected to some link, to some positive ideas. Need not worry much about moving away from the East. We must try to keep ourselves moving towards the West. We need not worry about not moving towards the East. We must focus on moving towards the West. So, accumulating positive tendencies, positive impressions, positive vibrations through positive words, ideas and thoughts. That's the process. So, one method is moving away from something. We need not do that. We must move towards something. That's what we must focus on. Positive movement towards a higher ideal instead of worrying about moving away from a wrong ideal. We need not do that. Positive movement towards a creative, constructive, higher ideal. Without worrying about moving away from a wrong idea. We need not worry about that. That's the idea.
Swamiji,
yeah.
Thakur is telling somebody that hold on to a post always one,
yeah.
Or a woman, village woman, yeah, who is, yeah, doing all the work and,
yeah,
paddy, but always his mind is always
some higher idea.
Higher ideas, yeah, and keep on while doing other work too.
Yeah, exactly.
That is the,
yeah,
idea.
Yeah, that's why in the Gita, Lord Krishna doesn't begin his instruction by preaching karma yoga. The first instruction that Lord Krishna gives to Arjuna is doing some good deed with some ambition, maybe with selfish purpose. If you cannot do something noble without a selfish purpose, do that noble deed maybe with a selfish purpose. So the four sloka bhaya rida ranatu baradam mam sindetva maharada agitim chabi bhudayani, like in the beginning of the second chapter there are four slokas. It's called loka nyaya sloka. It means it is just preaching common sense for life. That's the meaning. Where you just, if you run away from your duty, you incur bad name, your friends, your enemies will contemn you. So better do your duty. Lord Krishna never teaches Arjuna Nishkama Karma at the beginning. Then he says, he talks about Nishkama Karma, Yogastha Guru Karma, that later on comes. So, and then the third stage, you get established in Nishkama Karma, means you performing your action without any desire. That's the third stage. Beginning itself, Lord Krishna never asks Arjuna to start your life with Nishkama Karma, action without desire. It is impossible. Not only that, gives a strong warning. If a beginner in spiritual life starts practicing action without desire, there is a big problem. Buddhibedam janiye ajnanam karma sankina. If suppose you are working hard every day, you have a wonderful life goal to achieve, good job, good profession, you want to get a good high grade so that you have a good job, you will be a responsible citizen. You will do your duty to your family, your society. For that, you need wealth, high status, a good job. For that, you work very hard. If you tell such a person, no, you should not have any such goal. Because he is not ready for the practice of noble work without a definite purpose. So, his mind will go back blank. He will not be able. That's why Lord Krishna said, na buddhi vedam janiye, don't create disturbance. Then, at this third stage, you get established in Nishkama Karma. That's all. So, the first step in spiritual life to have some higher goal. Because that higher goal will give you gradually a kind of inner discontentment with the empirical things. That's why in this analogy, when the pilgrim was taken away into the thick forest and he was blindfolded, he was tied to a tree, he makes a lot of noise. See, the commentary Shankaracharya writes, Avduki Atrapadito. See, I'm weeping, I'm crying, I'm left in the dark forest, I'm in a miserable condition. He goes on weeping and crying. Then only a compassionate traveler comes to his rescue. So, like that, the first step in our life is to have a higher ideal. This higher ideal will take us to the next stage of spiritual evolution. That is when we feel a kind of dissatisfaction with the empirical worldly enjoyments. That's a natural state of evolution when you follow a higher ideal in life. So first principle is to follow higher ideas. That's the problem with Vyasa. Vyasa did not worry about helping humanity with a high spiritual purpose. So Narada told him, you should give them something positive for them to hold fast to. So Vyasa wrote Bhagavata Purana. And when he gave it to the humanity, then he became happy. He became contented.
So how
yeah.
do you...
Okay, please. No, you have done one. Now, next. Come on.
You talk about developing iron will. Any pointers how to do that?
Yes.
How to develop iron will?
Well, maybe the best way is to seriously think about the problems if you don't have a strong will. If you don't have a strong will, you won't be able to do anything good for the world or for you also. So strong determination is important in spiritual life and also in secular life. You that's one something very interesting. Take all the great spiritual teachers in all traditions, even the Christian saints who were persecuted, who were given only post-mortem recognition, canonization. When they were alive, they had to face a lot of problems. They never moved an inch backward. That they stuck to their idea. So that iron determination naturally comes to every spiritual seeker. Because he's rooted in the conviction that I am pursuing a higher goal, compared to which everything else is inferior. So that focus on the spiritual goal as something very, a supreme ideal, that will give us a strong determination. Without a strong determination, no one can succeed in spiritual life. You may even succeed in material life, but not in spiritual life. Because the moment you step into spiritual life, you find many unexpected inner challenges begin to emerge. Not that those problems did not exist earlier, but we did not take notice of those problems. We take notice of those problems only when you step into spiritual life. It's very interesting. So people ask the question, I turned to God to solve my problem, but when I turned to God, more problems are. Because our mind evolves higher, so the mind becomes more sensitive to a certain problems which were not problems before. When we evolve to a higher level of spiritual refinement, then certain problems that we did not take notice of become prominent. See, association, for example, for people who don't care for any spiritual value, everything is a matter of expediency. Diplomatically, you can anything that serves our purpose is okay. The moment our priority changes, when we get linked to a higher ideal, then we may feel may not be appropriate. Before that, it was okay. So our own focus on a higher ideal naturally will create certain problems. So we should be able to stick to our ideal. Otherwise, we may degenerate utilitarianism or expedience. It's a problem.
Is it due to our mind gets more subtle?
Yes, mind and thoughts get more subtle, become more subtle when we take to spiritual ideal.
So then we become more conscious of all these vibrations.
And we feel the need to avoid all this. Before we take to spiritual life, we may not feel the need to avoid certain undesirable things. Mm-hmm. We may take them in our stride before we take to spiritual life. When we take to spiritual life, we start judging everything from a higher perspective, using a different yardstick, criterion. But that's the only way to evolve in spiritual life.
So can following Dharma, you know, the idea of what the right action is from your position, can that become conflicting with pursuing the right company? Or does it change as you develop?
Could you repeat the question?
Dharma, because you talked before about how Dharma is not necessarily a road to the highest spiritual duty, right?
Yeah.
So I'm asking if following the duty based on, you know, the work you take up or
yeah.
the family relationships
yeah.
you have or something
yeah.
like that,
yeah. Yeah.
if that can become an obstacle to pursuing the right company and developing further,
yeah.
or
yeah.
does it change as you develop?
Yeah. Dharma in this particular context only means what all we are supposed to do as part of our duty. It doesn't have a spiritual content in the word dharma used in this particular context in the dialogue between these two saints, Narada and Vyasa. So that kind of duty consciousness, it is a kind of professional sense of duty consciousness, which by itself is necessary, but it may not take us to the highest spiritual fulfillment. That's what it means. So, a professional sense of duty consciousness may be okay, may be necessary for secular life. It is unavoidable. But it should be linked to some higher ideal. Then it becomes a higher ideal, a more creative ideal. So, Vyasa had not thought of this higher ideal. That's why Narada asked him to link this. Secondly, you know, we get a kind of inner joy when we do certain things which may not be part of our professional compulsion. This is a fact. I'm giving an example. Yesterday I gave the example. Big industry, captains of industry, billionaires, they may be acquiring a lot of money and wealth, but when they try, when they establish a trust for helping people suffering from earthquakes or tsunamis, natural calamities, or fighting epidemic diseases. Well, you know, why do they do that? It is not part of their duty. So far as they are concerned, it is not their part of professional compulsion. It is something that they do for a different reason. And when they do that, they get up in inner contentment. Inner contentment doesn't come when you do something as a part of your professional compulsion. It comes only when we do it for its own sake. That's an idea. Yeah.
Yes, Swadhyaya. You mentioned about the tough Swadhyaya as well. Swadhyaya, doesn't it contain two components? One is like the study of the self-study of the scriptures.
Yeah.
And the second one is the mantra jap.
This is study of scriptures and mantra japa together one. Another one, of course, is related to that. That is linking our mind to a higher ideal, feeding our mind to positive vrittis. Because whatever we study, we don't just study through mind alone. Even when we absorb thoughts, that's also a kind of feeding the mind with good ideas. So these are two. Mantra japa is an important meaning, and the other one is reading with meaning of important scriptures on the one hand, and also that help us to feed our mind with positive vrittis, vasanas and samskaras. That's the idea.
Surrender yourself to God.
Surrender is the only means to surrender.
Yeah. If I want to surrender, how I do that?
Yeah. If you are ready to surrender, you won't even ask this question. Right. So, we need not worry about do everything, looking upon God as the one help, assistant, protector. These are different means.
So just like nobody has question. See this tap, in the second chapter, Sadhan Pad, first sloka is like there is tap swadhyaya Ishwara Pranayama and Kriya Yoga. And then the same thing is in the very first chapter.
Yeah.
Niyama.
Yeah.
So Shantos Tap Swadhyaya
Ishwara
Pranayama.
Yeah, yeah. Ishwara Pranidhana comes as one of the components of Niyamas. Shauja Santosha Tapaswadhyaya Ishwara Pranidhana. So Niyamas. And that is also Swadhyaya. This also Swadhyaya. So, in Kriya Yoga, is a positive effort to refine our vrittis through associating our mind and intellect through creative ideas. The other one, Mantra Japa. In the Niyama part, Mantra Japa. In the Sadhana part, the first mantra. it means it's much, much higher, much bigger. It's part of a whole process called Kriya Yoga. Yeah. The other one is one of the rules constituting niyamas, which are secondary nature after yamas. You know. Yama comes first, and niyamas are just adjacent. Attributive qualities. The Swadhyaya implied in the first sutra of Sadhanapada, where Kriya Yoga is defined, has got a higher dimension and implication. Yeah.
So, Maharaj, you said that the sometimes spiritual seeker gets awakening, but again go back to their own life.
Yeah, yeah.
So why it happens? Just a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. So what we must do, you know, when we get this sudden, when you get great interest, we should try to intensify that interest by, it's just like a little fire, a small one or two dry twigs. We put more dry fuel, dry twigs, it become a blazing fire. So the interest in spiritual life should be increased, should be augmented, intensified through constant contemplation, meditation.
And discrimination also.
Discrimination will come automatically. For a beginner, you need not worry about discrimination. Positive attachment to some higher idea. Positive attachment, inclination to some higher spiritual practices or idea. This is a beginning, natural beginning of every spiritual process. That's the idea.
And he said, without spiritual effort needs, right? And
yeah.
God's grace also.
Yeah, yeah. God's grace, praying for God's grace will certainly be helpful. Yeah.
And spiritual fitness, is
right? Yeah, yeah. Spiritual fitness will automatically come. That's true. Any further? I will continue the discussion tomorrow. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa.